From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
All right. Welcome to the 80th episode of The Dice Men Cometh for July 30, 2015. 80 times we've done this.
You are on song tonight.
80 times.
Well done for making it, Mark. Thank you very much.
I just got cash for my breath.
Hey, you know, 80 is a lucky number for some. For the Chinese, they like eights.
They do.
They also like painting things red and drinking tiger penis soup.
For well, Mark's very red.
For virility. It's true, he is. He's wearing a red t-shirt tonight. The Chinese are very, very superstitious. But, you know, the Chinese also manufacture many of the board games that we like.
I know.
With thanks to their cheap labour and their poorly enforced OH&S standards. And, you know, Garth, I think tonight is a good chance to ask yourself, how many Chinese workers collapsed from ink fumes alone during the making of your favourite game, Sheriff of Nottingham?
Well, that I don't know, but I do have a copy of Chinatown with me right here, and I'm sure if I look in the rule book closely enough, it'll tell me how many people died in the making of this game.
Will it tell you what's coming up in the show?
Well, let's hope so, because we are going to talk about something very interesting and very exciting for you, Trent, which is the game Trains. We are then going to do some news for you, Trent, because you love this stuff. We are going to go and talk about bubbles that are bursting in our hobby. We're going to release the winners of our competition and then talk about our Winter Games Fest. Is that it?
All that and more!
Coming up after the Black Crown Initiate and Withering Waves. That is the sound of hipster metal. At least some of the guys in that band have got really big beards.
Okay, well, that's a start.
Excellent. That's the Black Crown Initiate. I love those guys from last year's album. That's called Withering Waves. And it's the horrible, horrible, horrible sound that starts us off this evening on another episode of The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name is Trent.
And I'm Mark.
I'm Garth.
And I believe Mark is to get us started this evening with another installment of what we've been playing lately.
We are going to play that, but
we're going to do something even more important before that. Garth.
Can you hear me shaking my bag?
Kind of just sounds like you got a pair of maracas in there.
I know. Yeah. Well, what I do have is my dice bag, which is full to the brim of over 100 entries.
Woo!
For our shameless self-promotion promotion.
I think that was the title we arrived at.
Yeah, which yeah. I think is beautiful and apt and appropriate and what have you.
With thanks to Area 52, our friendly local game store, who have been huge supporters of this show.
Yeah, exactly, fantastic. Right. And I went there and spent more money there today.
Lovely. And this and supporters of this radio station. Mm, also at Edge 99.3.
Yeah, so what we thought, because we have now got 5 prizes to give away, and tonight is the night. Tonight's the night we're giving all these away, so we better start, because we can't just leave it all till minute 58, can we?
I don't think so. Let's drag it out over the show. Make people suffer.
Excellent. So what we're going to do is we're going to start by drawing our 5th place winner, who is going to win a lovely copy of, Mark,
the game that's as fun to play as it is to say, El Luchador Fantástico Grande.
All right. Mark, do you want to do the honours and put your hand in my bag?
Oh, my hand is too big for your bag, Garth. All right, I'm shuffling it around.
All right, every day you're shuffling.
One name.
This isn't nearly half as interesting as it is to look at as it is.
And the winner is Perry Dean.
Do we mean Perry Dean from this very radio station?
Is that who Perry Dean is?
Did he enter our competition?
Here it is. Look, here it is. Perry Dean.
Is that illegal?
We'll put the...
Is that against the terms and conditions of this?
I don't know. Did anyone write any?
I think we said we couldn't enter and that was about it.
Okay. Look, Perry Dean is one of the other volunteers here at the community radio station that is Hobart's leading youth entertainment radio station.
And he's very much youth.
And Perry has actually helped us out here on the radio show as well. So he's won himself a game for his trouble.
Yep, exactly right.
Copy of our Luchador Fantastico Grande.
That's awesome.
And we're going to keep drawing all throughout the show. But let's get back to our regularly scheduled programming.
What have we been playing lately?
Mark, we've been playing a game. And that gag just never gets old. And believe it or not, the man who said he'd never, ever play a train game, he played a game with trains in it. Now, of course, there has been some discussion as to whether the game Trains by IEG is, in fact, a train game. Garth?
I would like to say that there has not been a discussion, apart from the fact that you say every single time we mention this game, this is a train game that's not about trains. That's the long and the short of the discussion we've been having, is it not?
No, I think it's actually, it's not a train game that's about trains.
Yeah, I know that's what you think.
Yeah.
But we haven't had a discussion about that.
Do you want to have that discussion now?
No, tell
Let's talk about trains first. So Trains by AEG, by the designer is Hisashi Hayashi, bless me. And it was originally put out in...
Racist.
I knew you were going to say that. Put out in Japanese first by Okazu and then picked up by AEG. It's came out in 2012 for 2 to 4 players, 12 and up. They say it plays in 45 minutes. Took us a bit longer than that. And, of course, following on from last week where I explained to everyone about my fear of explaining games, I explained this game. Turns out I did a shocking job because it got a couple of the rules wrong. But we got through it in the end. Now, this game has been lauded a bit. A lot of people have said good things about it. It was a 2012 Meeple's Choice nominee. It was a Golden Geek Best Card Game nominee in 2013. And believe it or not, it won the Origins Award for the Best Board Game in 2014.
Wow.
2 years after it came out.
There you go. They're on the button.
That's right. It is, of course, a deck-building game, but it's a deck-building game with a difference. And a lot of people have described it as Dominion crossed with El Grande because it has a board, in fact, a double-sided board technology, where you're placing cubes, which are train tracks, you're placing train stations. You're doing that as well as the Dominion thing of building your deck. And I think that really, it steps up the deck builder because a lot of deck builders have that feel of when you're building your deck, that's half a game. This has the second half, which is the map option, the area control option. So I quite liked it for that. Now, so you're building your deck, you're drawing trains, you're building stations, you're building track, and you're spreading out across the board, you're getting points from the stuff you do on the board. You can also get points from your cards, similar to Dominion and other deck builders. But what we saw was, in our particular game, that not a lot of points were scored that way, and the vast majority of the points were on the board.
Exactly right. And look, I do agree with you that it has a lot more to offer than your standard deck builder because of the board.
Mm.
However, I still feel from the game we played, it was approaching the three quarters of a board game, not really 100%. And I guess that just comes down to the vagaries of how the cards are that we had to choose from.
Yes, yes.
Because we had a lot of really limited options in the trains and the stations that we had to purchase. We had very few options that allowed us to trash our waste.
We had none. Well, yeah. So
we had one waste trash. Trent was the waste king.
The king of the landfill.
Yeah, you had
Captain Violia, they call him.
I don't really want to talk about this
guy. But then there was also no option, and this was the first time I'd experienced it in a deck builder, where there wasn't an option to get rid of your really low-powered basic trains, basic stations. There just wasn't that option, and that really clogged the deck.
Yes.
But didn't that have something to do with the selection of cards?
Yeah, so in this, similar to many deck builders, you've sort of got, I knew I was going to say that at some stage, you've sort of got one lot of cards that are always in there, your sort of standard ones, and then you've got random sets of about 8 other cards from a choice of about, I'd say, 15 or 16. Now, interestingly, this game has 300 cards in it. Now, Dominion, Thunderstone, a lot of those other cards, those deck builders, most of them ship with 500 cards.
Wow. In the base set.
Yeah. So it doesn't, I guess, it doesn't have the huge variety of cards. And what I saw after I looked through what we hadn't had in the game was I think there was only one card that let you trash
other cards apart from Waste, which I think is very limiting because, you know, when you play Dominion, when you play Thunderstone, when you play a lot of those other games, you want a way to get rid of your vanilla cards that you start your deck with. And in this case, I think we had seven vanilla trains, just worth one gold train point, that we could never get rid of. So you're right, it did clog, and I think potentially that made the game drag. And I think if I played it again, I would definitely make sure that that trashing card was in the selection of cards.
Yeah, I think that's very, very wise.
The best comparison that I could make for this... Actually, I should back up trains.
Yes.
So it had that going against it from the start. The dearest comparison I could make was in the Marvel Legendary and the Alien Legendary card games, which I've played, which I think do apply that weeding out the crap stuff.
There's lots of different mechanics in both of those games, yes.
And not exactly a board that you're applying any kind of area control mechanic to, but they do have play mats that you're at least trying to stack up achievements in.
Yes.
And I do think that both of those systems provide a much more satisfying play experience.
I agree. I have to say I agree because it feels, I don't know, it just doesn't feel complete. I mean, it feels like almost the board is there to make up for the fact that the decks are not particularly interesting. And that could purely be because of the nine decks we had to choose from. They were all just too much of a mattress and not enough variety.
We had a lot of action cards and very little other things. So, look, just a couple of notes. This is the first game in the Destination Fun, a trilogy from AEG. The other two being, of course, Planes and Automobiles, funnily enough, which I think Automobiles has a deck-building element, but Planes doesn't. So,
actually, more details about that coming up in our board gaming news later in the show.
And, of course, there is the Trains Rising Sun expansion / standalone. And I think that was one of the things that's missing is I thought they would have a truckload of expansions. They've really only brought out one, which actually is a standalone game as well. You're not likely to buy both because, yes, that has different cards, but I think it's the same thing. So, therefore, you're not going to increase your variety of cards available, which I think is probably a shame.
Yeah, shame. And I find it really odd that for a train game, it was so hard to actually just lay some train tracks.
Yes, yes.
And again, that must have been the cards we had, but no one was ever really able to put more than one or two cubes down at a time, so we had some very small and compact train lines.
Yeah, although looking through the selection of cards available, there wasn't a lot that could let you do a lot more of that.
It's a Japanese game, Japanese railway bureaucracy. I mean, that's world famous for just how difficult and slow it really is. Although,
are you kidding me?
I must say, the trains in Tokyo always do run on time.
Yeah, they do indeed.
And they would put any Australian rail system to shame.
Yeah, look, I'd love to play it again because I think it would play a lot quicker the second time, and it could be a hour or less game, and try a different mix of cards, but I quite enjoyed it. I do like the deck builders, I must admit, but I'd certainly give it another go.
It's lost me in the theme. I'm quite serious because, you know, your train spotters are your guys who stand around in the anoraks, you know, with the stopwatch and stuff. And I suppose I get it. I mean, I don't mind... I find airports quite exciting.
Yeah, I'd rather park at an airport and watch the planes go in and out myself.
Well, maybe we should buy planes.
Maybe. All right, so that's what we've been playing lately. Coming up next in the show, we'll draw another winner in our Area 52. Shameless self-promotion. Thanks, Area 52, for your patience primarily and for the games that we're giving away. Also, what else is coming up?
We're going to talk about the news.
We're
going to talk about the board game bubble. Is it going to burst?
Let's do the news next. All right, that's coming up in just a moment on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Just say it. Caitlin Park and Lemonade, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. This is the Dice Men Cometh, talking nerdy about board games and card games. And, oh boy, have we got some nerd news for you in just a moment. But Foist!
Yeah, we're going to draw our fourth prize winner, who's going to win a lovely copy of Coup.
Garth's doing the honours.
I am.
Now put your hand in there, Garth.
Mark.
Hand on the bag that Mark is holding to draw out the winner.
Here we go.
Woo!
We have, from lovely Canberra, Medusa in Love.
Also known as Merrin, I believe.
Exactly right. Yes. She has now won a game of Coup. she can put it in her Fortress of Awesome.
Fantastic.
Probably a game she's already got, so that may end up in some kind of second-hand bin somewhere.
That's all right.
At CanCon, maybe.
CanCon or a BorderCon. They've donated a lot of games to BorderCon in the past.
But it's all good.
Yeah, in fact, the game I got off the raffle table was from Meryn's husband, Terry, still in shrink wrap, that he never played.
You might get the impression from this one that the Australian board gaming scene is small and that we all know each other. It's not true.
No,
we just
know everybody.
There's 100 people in here and we probably only know 60 of them.
How many entries did we get into our shameless self-promotions promotion?
Well, we got over 110 unique entries.
Yeah.
So we had lots of people who have multiple entries through sharing and liking the various posts that we asked them to do, but we had at least 110 different human people who are in this dice bag.
Okay, gentlemen, if you could all join me in the theme music, please. Board gaming news. As discussed just moments ago, Alderaacht Entertainment has released... Well, they released trains first, then planes, and now automobiles, which completes their Destination Fun, and I think this qualifies, trilogy.
Yeah.
Although, really, it's two games that have nothing to do with the first game at all, beyond a vague, tangential connection through a film that no one remembers.
Yes. I remember that film.
David Short is the designer of the last two. It's nothing to do with the first game, trains. At all!
Well, I actually thought when I saw a picture of automobiles, it looked a bit like trains, whereas the planes one is totally different.
The automobiles one is primarily about collecting cubes that represent
Cube builder. That's right,
modifications to your car. Yeah. Anyway, that's due out in November.
Yeah. Sounds fully sick, bro.
Yeah.
The Kennerspiel 2013 winner, Legends of Andor, is getting a new English printing. Mark, you've played Legends of Andor.
Yeah, I played it once, and I think you'd sum it up as sort of a German take or a Euro take on the adventure game genre, sort of a German Legends where it's all cardboard and tokens and things. You're moving about around the board, moving on little numbered spaces, and when you go on to certain numbered spaces, certain things happen. You have quests to fulfill. I think there's 10 adventures in the book that you can play your way through, sort of like a campaign. And I believe it's designed by Michael Menzel, who, before this game, was known purely as a board designer. He did all the beautiful boards such as Pillars of the Earth and other ones like that, those fantastic Euro boards.
Oh, so just that's the his boards, work. Like
yeah,
just
he was
design,
not a board game designer. He was a board designer in terms of a board artist. But this is his first board game design. Look, it was interesting, but just a bit Germany.
Whenever you say it was interesting, we know it wasn't really that good.
Well, look, this was put out back in 2013 when it won the Kennerspiel back by Fantasy Flight Games. It's being reissued by Cosmos, who are also finally releasing the two expansions for this game that have never before been released in English.
All right.
And that is the New Heroes expansion and something called Star Shield, which has got more adventures in it, apparently. Wow. And that's going to be due out in November. Now,
is there a reason why they haven't been released in English?
Surely, Fantasy Flight Games don't do things unless they think they're going to make money.
Correct.
All right, so I guess the initial sales of that never quite added up.
Didn't you say Cosmos are going to do it?
Cosmos are going to do it this time for the reissue the expansions. But Fantasy Flight Games are turning to another classic title for one of their next publications. The return of Fury of Dracula.
Yes.
Mark, this is another game you know all about.
Well, Fantasy Flight did the second version of Fury of Dracula.
Oh, okay.
So there was a version, I think, way back in 1987 was the very mid-80s. First version. Similar time as when the original Arkham Horror came out. Then Fantasy Flight did their version, I think, probably mid-2000s, which was the version that I had.
Now, Fury in the Dark, this Dracula game, is essentially just Murder in the Dark glorified with bits and stuff, isn't it?
Oh, no. Look, it's...
Don't you have to turn out the lights and stuff?
No. You're thinking of a totally stupid game that a totally stupid person hosts at his house. This is a completely different game. This is very much like Adventures of Whitechapel.
Yep.
Or Scotland Yard, where one person plays Dracula, secretly moving around the board for, I think,
four, maybe five people, play the hunters that are hunting for Dracula. It's actually a fantastic game. Quite clunky in the Fantasy Flight style, but I really enjoyed it, although I did sell mine after a few plays.
Well, there's been a lot of people who have the second edition going, no, because they've been able to sell it for $250 plus on eBay.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, their investment's just gone about down the toilet.
Speaking of old properties, speaking of old properties that should have died a death.
Yeah.
Cowabunga, dudes!
Is this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Oh, yeah. It's being turned into a mission-based cooperative descent clone board game.
He was coming, got the Vietnamese wishing.
With
the
if there's a Vanilla Ice soundtrack.
This is all with thanks to Kevin Wilson, who's been working with Kevin Eastman, who is the original designer and artist on the Turtles. So at least he's involved. For anyone who that's going to be due out, sometime early next year. But for anyone who can't wait for that, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Dice Masters.
Oh no!
Going to be available in January. Okay, now for anybody who thinks they have too much money and just need to get rid of some, this is your last chance right now to get into Magic the Gathering, because the very last core set for beginners has been printed by Wizards of the Coast. It's called Magic Origins. It is out, and it is proving incredibly popular with both beginners and longtime fans of the game, both. So they have managed to just kick every goal conceivable with this Magic Origins series.
And are you saying that they will never again produce a starter set?
I'm saying that that's what they're saying.
Okay. And is that like John Farnham, this is his very last performance?
I think it's exactly
okay,
like that.
Right,
because,
yeah.
And I'm going to get into this in some detail, actually, Magic continues to be a very, very strong performer for Wizards of the Coast and for their parent company, Hasbro, which is also heavily investing, as we speak, in Magic Online. Mm. And in fact, Magic continues to be the best-selling collectible card game in the world, which leads me into some stats that I've managed to gather courtesy of the website ICV2. Do you guys know this website, ICV2?
Heard of it.
Yeah, it's a cool website.
Look, these guys actually do, they actually invest in gathering some real data on the hobby. And, in this case, Hasbro have just put out a press release about their intention to actually get out of game manufacturing altogether. They're selling their Irish and Massachusetts-based factories to a Belgium game manufacturer who will continue to make stuff for Hasbro, so that's not confusing at all. I think this what this means is that Hasbro is getting out of running factories where they make their stuff. So essentially, the factory where they used to make their stuff is now an independent entity, which will now have to pitch to Hasbro along with half of China to make stuff for them.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. And look, Hasbro released their financial results.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, you've got news on that?
Okay. I do. $41.8 million they made for the spring quarter alone.
Mm-hmm.
The vast bulk of that for Hasbro is in the sale of little plastic dinosaurs.
Yes.
From the Jurassic World.
Oh, really?
Franchise.
Wow.
Yeah. But look, this neatly plugs us into some research that ICV2, the website, has just done on what all of this is worth. We covered this at the same time last year in The Dice Men Cometh. ICV2 does an annual audit of the North American, by which they mean the US and Canada, hobby game industry.
The part of the world that counts.
To see, well, that's where all the people are, man.
Yeah, I mean, and
there's
the money.
There's only, 23, 24 million of us Australians? I don't know. There's 8 times that?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's 200 million just in the US, isn't
right,
there?
Or more. You know, plus Canada. Yeah, I mean, that's where the money is. Yeah. That's why we get this stuff late here in Australia. We're at the arse end of the world, particularly the case in Tasmania.
Yes.
No one cares. So, what is the hobby game industry worth? Well, according to ICV2, in 2014, it was worth $880 million.
Wow, how do we get a share of that?
Up up from $700 million in 2013. And by far and away, the most profitable section of that is the collectible card games, card games, which are worth $550 million. And of themselves.
That's two-thirds of the hobby.
Yeah.
And of that, Magic is number one.
Wow.
Anyone care to name the top five after that?
Pokemon.
Pokemon's number two.
My Little Pony.
Yu-Gi-Oh's number three.
My Little Pony.
No. Doesn't write a mention in the top five.
Lord of the Five Rings, L2R, Hero Clicks.
Hero Clicks is number four. In number five, Marvel Dice Masters.
Oh, wow. Damn that Marvel Dice Masters. Eh?
And listen, just very quickly, and then I'm going to wrap up the news. Top five card and dice games, according to the ICV2's research. This is for the last, for the spring quarter. Number five, Splendor.
Okay.
Number four, Star Realms, which I always thought was a collectible card game, actually.
No.
Number three, we'll love this one, Machikoro.
Yes.
Number two, Sheriff of Nottingham.
Hey. There you go.
We're going to draw the winner of that in just a few moments.
Indeed.
Number one, Boss Monster.
Wow. Oh, really?
I know, but that's kind of riding the wave of this whole... You know, the Pixels...
Yeah, video games, 8-bit art, that sort of stuff.
Even though Pixels the movie is absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
Now, look, I should very quickly say that the division between what ICV2 counts as a card-slash-dice game and what they count as a board game is not entirely clear, but I'll run through the top five board games that have sold well in the last quarter of business, and then we'll wrap up the news, and this is going to be really disappointing to a lot of folks, so I'll just put out that there. Number five... XCOM.
Okay.
From Fantasy Flight.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
Number four, an old favorite, Pandemic.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, yep.
Number three, Star Wars Imperial Assault.
That's good. Wow. Okay. That's high.
And in fact, anything, you know, there's more. You can look up the ICV2 website for more stats on this, because Star Wars is all over the top tens of all of these categories.
Mm.
Number two, Ticket to Ride.
Wow. It's not gone anywhere. Number one.
Catan.
Oh, there you go. Although Fantasy Flight having two relatively new games in there, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Hey, Trent, when did you do your research?
Last night.
Look at this.
What's that?
Look at this. Hot off the presses. Z-Man Parent buys Plaid Hat.
Ooh.
It's just gone live. The Z-Man Parent, Z-Man's parent company, F2Z Entertainment, has just acquired Plaid Hat Games. This is being announced live almost.
Yeah, so that's dated July 30 US time. So I'm gonna claim that the time difference has made me miss that.
Yeah, but that's really interesting.
That and also my full time job.
And look, and I mean the great thing is, and you know, Colby Doubt is set quoted here. It gives them an opportunity to actually just stick to what they do really well, which is game development, and leave all the sales and marketing and all the other stuff to the big guys.
Okay, boys and girls,
that's
that is
news.
Our news. And we'll be back with more on The Dice Man Cometh in just a moment. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mogwai.
Wow, that was an abrupt finish from Mogwai with Teenage Exorcists. You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Oh, we are the Dice Men Cometh. Garth. There's no teenagers in here.
Garth, let me get my hands on your bag.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We got the next prize draw.
Oh, yeah.
This is for a copy of...
Love Letter.
Love
third
Letter.
Prize.
Who are you giving a love letter to, Trent?
With thanks to Area 52, we are awarding this one to Richard James Channel.
Yeah,
ooh.
That's cool.
Is that how we pronounce his name? Channel?
We do.
Chanel. Richard Chanel.
Or is it Chanel number five? Congratulations, Richard. You are, you're writing love letters now.
Fantastic.
So long as you care to play that game.
Great game.
And a damn fine game it is.
Indeed it is. All right, what are we talking about next? We're going to talk about some bubbles?
Yes. In fact, I wanted to... This came up because of a post that Mark, you shared on our Facebook page.
From Bruno.
Around the golden age of board gaming, which is, it's prompted the creation of this show, hasn't it?
It is. It has.
And
it does.
There's more titles that are more fun to play than ever before, which has led some people to believe that we might be living in the middle of a board gaming bubble.
Dun, dun, dun.
And Bruno Feduti is not the first sort of person to pose this theory, but he is perhaps one of the most prominent. Bruno Fedutti being a French board game designer, responsible for titles like Mystery of the Abbey, Mission Red Planet Citadels, Masquerade, co-designer on Warrior Knights.
Yes.
One of my favourites.
And Nightmare Chess.
He's also studied economics.
Yes, so he's a clever man.
Exactly. And he posits that we may be in the middle of a board gaming bubble. And I wanted to just kind of go through his argument and maybe see what you gentlemen think, if that's all right. Because it was absolutely a damn interesting article, but a little bit lengthy. And so I imagine a lot of people on Facebook couldn't be asked reading it.
Well, it was also in French.
It was a great deal of it.
And English, yes.
He's comparing the board gaming bubble, or the golden age of board gaming, to the comics bubble of about 15 years ago, or the CCG boom of the 90s, where we all thought it was going to last forever at the time. And, look, everybody thinks that video games were going to kill off board games, but in fact, Bruno sort of states from out of the gate in his article that given that video games are a primarily solo activity, this has fueled the rise of social board games to the point where it's almost a fad now. Would you agree that it's actually a fad?
Well,
at least
I'd like to take issue with Bruno around video games being a purely solo activity, because I think the growth games is when you're playing with your mates. I mean, what's the new one, Destiny's Child or whatever it's called?
Yeah, but I think what you've got to understand there, Mark, and you've got to stop pretending to be young, is that when you're playing a game, you are playing it as a solo experience in the story mode.
And
what
you're
talking about is the sandbox version, which is basically a whole bunch of teenagers and you with their pretend AK-47s just shooting each other.
And not everybody has access to a really good ADSL connection,
course,
even
yes.
now, yes. right? And particularly here in Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
Another reason that he thinks it might be a particularly successful successful business model at the moment, that being board games, is that currently, well, this is Bruno's theory, there isn't a way of pirating a game.
Yep.
Which is actually something that I would dispute, because I've been to Hong Kong.
As have I.
And seen the pirate board games that are on sale there.
Well, it was interesting to see a discussion recently in the Tabletop Gamers Design Group on Facebook where exactly that has happened, that Chinese knockoffs, not being racist, but Chinese knockoffs have come out of Too Many Cinderellas, a game just released, and also, I think, Rise to Power, another Australian game recently released from Kickstarter.
Well, that raises a really interesting topic about print and plays.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with so much out there now, you can put a game out there on Kickstarter, you can put a game out there on Board Game Geek, you can get it out there in multiple ways. You just need to have that print and play to be able to reach the masses.
Yes.
But it also opens up the legitimate designers who put out really solid print and plays to that copyright.
And that was a part of the discussion in that forum was, does this mean that that they shouldn't put a print and play in the Kickstarter? And I think most of them agreed that actually, look, it's a risk worth taking, because, hey, probably not many people in the Asian half of the world are going to get their hands on their games anyway, so maybe just a bit more exposure for them.
If only there was some way for economists to run some kind of experiment on this particular segment of the economy to see what happens when market saturation gets achieved. Oh, wait, Germany, the traditional home of the modern board game, where sales have plateaued about 10 years ago, again, according to Bruno. And
yes.
Look, he ought to know. I mean, he's in the middle of the industry and he's over there. He says that market saturation has been well and truly achieved, a.k.a. peak game. Again, his article sort of goes on to break down the difference between board games and video games, and he provides us with a great description of the board gaming business model compared to video games, which are taking increasingly huge armies of programmers years to produce.
Yes. And hundreds of millions of dollars.
You and I were talking about, when is Portal 3 coming out?
God only knows,
We can't wait.
Exactly right. It's fantastic, but it's also such a simple game, but it invests hundreds of millions of dollars in.
Now, compared to that, a board game takes a very small team, a designer, an illustrator, a publishing team, and with a budget in just five figures, you can print 3,000, 5,000 games in China, and you can probably break even.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a low-risk enterprise, low reward, but you've got a chance for a hit as well. And that's fine. That works fine as a business model until you've got 10 million people doing it and, let's say, hundreds and hundreds of titles coming out every year.
Yes.
Which is a fairly accurate sort of description of where we are right now in the golden age of board gaming, isn't it?
And even if you look at, I guess, Kickstarter.
Exactly.
And without wishing to steal any of your thunder, you can sort of compare where I recently backed The Bard's Tale, the new computer game from the developer of The Bard's Tale computer game from about 25 years ago. That, as a small Kickstarter, raised, I think, $2 or $3 million to fund a
million.
An indie computer game. Yeah. Whereas if you look at an indie board game, we're talking, you know, $10,000 or so.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. And so the scale of all of this is much smaller, and no one's pretending that board games are taking over from video games anytime soon. But what we do have at the moment is, with Kickstarter lowering the barrier to entry, is that I think we have a condition of oversupply.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you?
Yeah, I agree.
There are more games than can possibly be played in a saturated market. And the games are often dubious in quality.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got amateurs competing with professionals. And the only result is that you have to cut margins to compete.
Yes. And we've often said it seems like those particularly Kickstarter games are so, so cheap now. How can anyone make any money out of those?
Exactly. But I do like the point he raised, which is because he says that he himself backs 2 to 3 Kickstarter board games every single month. So he gets a lot of them across his own personal table.
Because a lot of Kickstarter games are great.
Exactly. Yeah. But he also says very, very succinctly that if these games were published by legitimate professional designers, they would be fantastic. So what they've got is these amateurs, as he uses the word, who have created a good sort of a seed of an idea, but haven't had the means, the skill, or the budget to turn it into a fully fledged idea, which is what a designer would be able to do.
Yeah, so look, the cut and thrust of Bruno's article, and it is still on our Facebook page if you want to sort of dig back and read it, it is worth reading, is that he's not predicting doom and gloom for the board game industry, but he is predicting a slowing of growth. And we talked about those figures earlier. We've gone from 700 million last year in North America alone to 880 million this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's, 20% growth or something? That is, it's not sustainable, right? You can't maintain that. You know, the growth of the Chinese economy, if that's taught us anything with what's happening at the moment in the Chinese stock market, you can't maintain that.
Yeah.
It's going to slow down at some point. So, I personally think that board gaming may have become a little bit of a fad, but from our perspective here in Tasmania at the arse end of the world, I mean, that's a fad in a place where fads happen.
Yeah.
All right? I mean, fads don't happen down here. You know what I mean?
I would just like to quote him because I believe it'll make you two guys very, very happy.
Oh, yes.
Because he said that board gaming, and I quote, is mostly popular with 40 to 50-year-old hipsters and upper-middle-class people with purchasing power. So you guys are about two-thirds of that.
I'm aspiring to be upper-middle-class.
Yeah, and this is going to be replaced with something, like sooner or later, some disruptive bit of technology like the Oculus Rift is going to actually make it to market, or some kind of haptic technology, or Google Glass, or Smell-O-Vision.
Yeah, but the reality of it is, though, and again, he says this in the article, is that it's more likely that paper books will disappear before board games will.
Sure.
I think it's...
Well, there's a viable alternative to that in your Kindles.
Yeah. Exactly right, yeah.
Okay, well, look, let's come back in a minute, talk a bit more. Before then, we're going to kindly take our clothes off. Maybe.
Take your clothes off.
Okay, I will.
No. No!
That was Since We Kissed, a great Tassie act. And their song, Kindly Take Your Clothes Off, you're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Iceman Cometh. I really liked that one. But it's time to draw our second last prize.
The sound you're hearing is the sound of me with my fingers on Garth's bag.
Sheriff of Nottingham
is his prize.
The
bag in which he has placed all of the entries, all of the people who have liked our posts over the last month.
And shared them.
And with thanks to Area 52, I would like to read the winner of Sheriff of Nottingham. It is a Mr. Todd McPherson.
Woo!
Congratulations, Todd.
There you go.
All right, in just a moment, we're going to draw the winner of our grand prize, which is Dead of Winter, one of the greatest games to be released in our hobby in the last 2 years, three years, 4 years.
Yeah, but before we get to that, let's quickly mention, coming up soon in... not this weekend, but next weekend.
Oh, yes.
The Winter Games Fest number 5 right here in Hobart.
Which is wrapped into the larger event that is Devil Island Con, which is put on by Area 52 at the Best Western Hotel in Bathurst Street in
Hobart. Area 52, they're the same ones who sponsor this fantastic competition.
Funny you should point that out, but yes, that's absolutely correct. And they have helped us put together a great event with the Hobart Game Society, and we've got, look, a lot of things happening, mainly just people turning up and playing games.
Sounds good. There's also competitions.
That's well, no, it's really just about the games.
Tournaments.
Just there's a Seven Wonders tournament.
Yeah. And a Splendor tournament.
And a Splendor tournament. Mm. Yeah. And stuff from those games that you can win. We have a copy of Seven Wonders Babel that's up for grabs.
Awesome.
And plenty of places for you to join in the tournament, which I'll be running, given that I have no chance of winning.
And I think there's a massive exodus of gamers from mainland Australia coming to this event, or at least 4 or 5.
We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, we can't wait to see them.
Definitely. Now, what's happening that is on a comparable level to Winter Games Fest, which starts pretty much now, there's been a lot of activity on Twitter, which is Gen Con. Now, are you going?
Gen Con, the biggest board gaming event in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Well, maybe rivals.
I think the Essen Spiel had more people, but obviously in what we call the most important part of the world to them is
the
North America. Yeah. I think last year they had 45,000 people or something over the three or four days.
But the point is we're not going. So there has been a massive movement that started only last year called Gen Can't. I'm going to say this very, very carefully.
What did you call me?
Exactly right. Now, this started on Twitter when a guy called Jason Patterson and a lady called Susan Sheldon, amongst others, basically started talking about how envious they were of all these wonderful people who were able to go to Gen Con and how they weren't able to go. So they created...
who had the time, who had the disposable income.
Exactly right.
Didn't have families.
So you know what they did, Trent?
What's that?
They created a hashtag.
Is that...
So they created hashtag Gen Can't. I'm just saying very, very, very carefully. But basically this thing just grew and grew and grew like wildfire. And from its very early stages last year to now, it is an official unconvention or an official virtual con or an official digital gathering, however you would like to say it. But essentially what they've got now is a whole bunch of prizes, a whole bunch of sponsors. They've got badges that you can download and proudly display, wow, similar to your PAX or your Gen Con badges, obviously. But there are thousands and thousands of people who are now linked into this community, just celebrating the fact that they are going to be playing games over the same 4 or 5 days that Gen Con is on all over the world. And I think that's a fantastic way for our hobby to be growing.
Yeah.
I am quite sure that in the future there is going to be some kind of virtual world, like a Second Life thing that we all log into, and that's how we get to Gen Con. These two things are all going to come together.
I'm sure of it. I love the fact that it was started purely by, we wish we were there.
Yeah.
It's not, they were able to go and we're not. It's just, oh, come on, let's all join in the excitement of
it. In 20 years, anybody who wants to actually be there will be able to.
Exactly right. Sure. So look, anyway, check out the website. It's gencant.com. you can enter. There's two ways to win prizes. You can go into a raffle, and that'll only be announced probably in a couple of hours' time because it's US time. And then there's also a photo contest. All you got to do is submit your photos and do the hashtag GenCant, and you might win. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of prizes. It's awesome.
I think it might help if you called it GenCant. Then it's not so rude.
Speaking of prizes, yes, the last one, the big one.
I've got my fingers on Garth's bag again, and I'm going to hand them over to Mark to draw the grand prize winner with thanks to Eric. Area 52 and our shameless self-promotion, the Dice Men Cometh.
Here we go.
Are very pleased to present a copy of Dead of Winter, courtesy of Area 52.
And the winner is Paul McLaren. Not Malcolm McLaren, but Paul McLaren.
Fantastic. Congratulations, Paul.
He goes around like a buffalo girl.
And all he had to do... Oh, my God, you're so unhip, aren't you? I can't believe I shared this space with you.
That was Malcolm McLaren.
Oh, my... look, just please stop. 20 years ago.
Yeah.
20 years ago, Mark.
Okay. Go. We're running out of time.
Thanks to Area 52 for helping us out with the shameless self-promotion. We will catch you next week. We are the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.